House will come to order. I'd be to turn that on first. Flag salute will be led by Representative Wingard.
Witt.
Representative Witt. Sorry.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremony will be presented by Carl B. Clapp, lay minister, South Park Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of West Lynn, guest of Representative Van Orman. Want to stand up again? We want to stand up.
Would you like to stand up?
Thank you. Among his many honors, the poet William Stafford was named Poet Laureate of Oregon in 1975. Stafford was truly Oregon's poet, and over his lifetime had composed nearly 22,000 poems. In the book, An Oregon Message, is a poem that I think speaks to us as Oregonians. It speaks to us as lawmakers, as citizens, as caretakers of the earth, and it gives us gentle warning that what we have in life is precious and needs thoughtful and tender caring. I share with you William Stafford's poem, On Earth. Any sun that comes, even one not ours, could have these lakes to drink out of any time. And other laws could come besides the ones we have, all springing from a force that makes them right. The lives we have, while we have them, can measure time before and after today to use or to give away. On earth, it is like this, a strange gift we hold while we look around. It is an honor to be with you today, an honor to share these prophetic words in our present world of sometimes confusion and bewilderment. Stafford's words, although written many years ago, still stand with as much meaning and as full of purpose as they were when they were composed. It is my hope that we, as a united people, a state, a nation, can look about us while we are here and grasp the wonder and the beauty of life and be willing to share the abundance of our heritage with those with whom we share this planet. My hope is that we will be able to measure our time here in peaceful and creative coexistence. Have a wonder-filled day as you go about your individual tasks and responsibilities. Thank you so much.
Courtesies. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's my pleasure this morning to introduce one of my very dear friends, Carl Clapp. Carl is a former high school teacher in teaching art in North Marion and actually taught in North Bonneville, Washington. Carl has held offices in the Oregon Art Education Association and was elected the Oregon Art Educator of the Year. He was also involved in the National Art Education, and he was the Pacific Region Art Educator of the Year as well. He's been active in the Unitarian Universalist Church as a lay minister since 1966 and has held numerous offices in the associations. He is currently our lay minister at South Park Fellowship, and I'm very pleased and honored to have him with me today. And I also would like to introduce his wife, June Clapp, who is a retired teacher, having taught at Sunset in West Lynn and teaching music. And then my dear friend, Bob Gray, is active in his 80s as a business in a sports fab business, and they are here as my guests today, and I encourage you to welcome them.
Further courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, help me welcome members of the Campaign for Oregon Seniors and People with Disabilities. These folks represent a diverse group of organizations from business, labor, consumer, and grassroots advocates, case managers, and others. They set out more than a year ago to raise awareness of the importance of services to Oregon seniors and people with disabilities. They believe that Oregon's long-term care system provides vulnerable Oregonians independence, choice, and dignity in receiving just the care they need. There are more than 100 advocates in the building today, colleagues. They come from across the state, and they are wearing yellow scarves. Please join me in welcoming them to the Capitol. If they're here, please wave.
Further courtesy is Representative Greg Smith.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues, as well. I'd like to introduce to you this morning my newest staff member. Come on over here. We needed to bring in a fresh approach. And so today I'd like to introduce to you, colleagues, my nephew. His name is Nicholas Smith, and he's in second grade at Moala Elementary. He and I have something in common in that our mascots are both the Mustangs. So from Heppner High School, it's the Mustangs, and Moala, it's the Mustangs. He one day wants to have three career objectives. One, he wants to be president of the United States. Two, he wants to be self-sufficient and grow his own food and hunt for his own food. And three, he wants to be a long snapper in the NFL. So, colleagues, would you please join me in welcoming my newest staff member, Nicholas Smith.
Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please extend courtesies to four honorary pages. Today, they are all from the Fernwood campus of Beverly Cleary School. First, we have Jacob Tietzhart. Jacob, would you stand, please? Jacob is 14, and he's in the eighth grade. His interests are architecture, sports, video games, and being with his family. His career goal is to be an architect and to be successful. Next, we have Caitlin Hartman. Caitlin is 13, also in the eighth grade, and her activities and interests are yearbook creation and lacrosse. She would like to be a scientist and help people. Welcome. We have Juliana Hairston. Juliana is also 13 and in the eighth grade. Juliana is interested in math, science, and literature, and she would like to go into a medical field, either doctor, dentist, or surgeon. Welcome. And finally, we have Paige Hart. Paige is 14 and in the eighth grade. She does choir, music, literature, and photography. Those are her passions. And she would like to go into psychology and philosophy. Colleagues, please extend courtesies to our honorary page, Paige, and the other pages. Welcome.
Further courtesies, Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. Today is Oregon's 9th Annual Substitute Teacher Appreciation Day. I would like you to extend courtesies to a constituent of mine and 2008 Substitute Teacher of the Year, Mary Kalusik. We didn't meet last year, so I brought her this year. Mary is from Gaston and is a substitute teacher for the Gaston, Forest Grove, and Banks school districts. She's been teaching for 17 years, and with this honor has been recognized by her peers and administrators for her dedication to education. Mary earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in Spanish and Mathematics from Texas Tech University, go Red Raiders, and began a career as a computer programmer. Then she began volunteering in children's classrooms and decided she wanted to return to school and become a substitute teacher. So she received her teaching credentials from Portland State University, go Vikings. Mary received this award because of her strong classroom management skills and her ability to learn students' names quickly, to adapt to different personalities in the classroom, and to come up with a lesson plan quickly if one is not provided. Mary is truly one of Oregon's best teachers. Colleagues, please join me in welcoming Mary Kalusik to the Capitol today and congratulate her on a well-deserved honor.
Welcome to your Capitol. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today we have another honored school teacher, Oregon Substitute Teacher of the Year for 2009. I'm honored to introduce Samuel Drennan on the side aisle over here. Samuel was selected for his exceptional work as a substitute in the Woodburn School District. He's known for his use of humor without the thorns and put-downs. Reminds me of us on the House floor today. He identifies potentially troublesome students and gives them a special task to keep their interest and to help them progress. He also selects students' assistants who help him keep the class on track. Samuel's also known for his love of the Styrofoam cup calculators. And maybe we could have you come and present those to us in business and labor as we're trying to figure out those numbers. It's truly a way to recycle Styrofoam cups here in the state of Oregon. Colleagues, welcome Samuel, and congratulations on your Oregon Substitute Teacher of the Year award.
And welcome to your Capitol. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two honorary pages to welcome today. Eric Osberg, would you stand? 8th grader at Fernwood Beverly Cleary School, interested in student leadership and athletics and considering careers as a firefighter or in law enforcement. Welcome, Eric. And Lizzie Schuberg, his classmate from Beverly Cleary Fernwood, interested in sports and career goal of becoming a teacher. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to also welcome some honorary pages from the Portland area. Could Avery Morris please rise? Avery is a student at Beverly Cleary Fernwood. She is interested in track, ballet, soccer, tennis, event, and she's on the event planning committee at school. Her career goals include international relations. Welcome. Also, Julian Hanlon Austin. Julian also goes to Beverly Cleary Fernwood. He's in the 8th grade. He's interested in sports and wants to be a lawyer when he gets older. Third, Juliana Hairston. Juliana? There you go. Juliana's in the 8th grade at Beverly Cleary Fernwood. She's also into sports and wants to be a pediatrician one day. And finally, Hudson Reniker. Hudson also attends Beverly Cleary Fernwood in the 8th grade. He's interested in baseball, music, and other sports, computer animator. He wants to be a computer animator and in business management. Please, colleagues, welcome our honorary pages to the Capitol. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't realize it, but I've got a very special constituent here today, and I want to introduce you. She's on the side aisle. Her name is Miriam Butler. Miriam, if you'd stand, and we'll welcome you to the House. Miriam's from Silverton. She's here today on the student outreach program. She's helping out in Representative, I can't say his name, my friend from Salem, Almsville, and Turner. And among her interests are music, violin, and piano festivals. And I hope you'll extend the courtesies of the House to Miriam. Welcome, Miriam.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll follow my good colleague from the land of the Christmas trees. We have another honorary student with us today, John Abel. If you want to stand and be recognized, John is a homeschooler in the 10th grade, and his interests include airsoft, ultimate frisbee, splitting wood, wow, building things, and his favorite subjects are history, math, and enjoying time with his friends. Career goals, it says here he doesn't really know, but I talked to him this morning. He's got some pretty big aspirations in his life that he's thinking he's going to do. And I just want to welcome both these students today and enjoy your day at the Capitol, and I hope you learn many things that for your future leadership in the state.
Welcome. Great to have you here. Let's return to our moment in sesquicentennial history. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's history minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Doug Decker, who is executive director of the Tillamook Forest Heritage Trust. The Tillamook Burn was a catastrophic series of large forest fires in the North Oregon Coast Range Mountains. It began in 1933 and struck at six-year intervals through 1951, burning a combined total of 355,000 acres. The largest of the four fires, and the most devastating, began on August 14, 1933, in a logging operation in the slopes above the North Fork of Gales Creek, west of the town of Forest Grove. In 10 days, the fire had burned 40,000 acres, but that was dwarfed by what happened the evening of August 24th. Pushed by strong east winds, the fire exploded into 240,000 acres in 20 hours. The 1933 fire primed the landscape for additional fires. Year after year, the standing dead trees dried out, becoming a powder keg awaiting ignition. By 1951, the lands had begun to transition into public ownership. Rather than pay property taxes on the burned-over lands, many private landowners forfeited the land to the county. In the 1940s and 50s, the county governments agreed to transfer the lands into the state ownership, and in return, the counties received a portion of the future revenues from timber forest. Visitors to the forest today have to look hard to find clues to its fiery past, but the legacy of the Tillamook Burn will shape the landscape for generations to come. Mr. Speaker, if anybody really was listening, that last part of it about the lands transitioning to the state ownership, that's your Council of Forest Trust Land Counties. Those are the state forest lands that people are talking about changing the use of. And that's a little editorial on the side, but just wanted to let you know.
We'll save the rest of that for remonstrances, Representative. We'll be listening. Seeing no further courtesies, the clerk will now open the voting system to verify the presence of a quorum. Representative Beyer is present. Representative Buckley. Excused business to the House. Also excused business to the House, Representative Jefferson Smith and Representative Kump. All other members are present. Messages from the Governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Governor to inform you that he has approved and signed the following bills, House Bill 2201, 2275, and 2466.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bill 2079, Senate Bills 8, 10, 38, 227, 287, 303, 344, 498, 607, 618, 633, 646, 679, 687, 691, 763, 786, 794, 863, 911, 928, 952, and 973.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2011 relating to auditing higher education courses.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2011A. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today, colleagues, to ask for your vote on House Bill 2011, which comes from the Education Committee with a unanimous due pass recommendation. This is an important bill that directs our state institutions of higher education to waive the tuition for any courses audited by an Oregonian 65 years of age or older. Seniors can audit any class for free when there is space available, the department approves, and they register as part-time students. This also includes the state's community colleges with similar requirements for senior citizens to audit the class. This bill is a way to open up the doors and give seniors the rewards of our great state colleges and universities and community colleges without worrying about the cost. Considering this bill today on Seniors Day at the Capitol is one way that we can take a moment to recognize and appreciate we elder Oregonians. And on behalf of the Education Committee and the senior citizens of our state, I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Van Orman, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Witt votes aye. House Bill 2011A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Propositions and motions. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that House Bill 2440 be withdrawn from the Committee on House Administration.
Representative Hanna moves that House Bill 2440 be withdrawn from the Committee on House Administration. You'll recall that House Rule 9.30 provides that immediately upon a motion to withdraw a measure from committee, the clerk shall read the measure's number, title, and summary. The clerk will do so.
House Bill 2440, relating to audits, creates Director of Legislative Audit Office appointed by Joint Legislative Audit Committee, expands pool of members eligible to serve on committee, authorizes director conduct performance and management audits of state agencies and programs and other state-funded programs, requires director to maintain government waste hotline, repeals statutory authority of Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits, declares emergency effective on passage.
As provided in House Rule 5.15, a motion to withdraw a bill from committee is not debatable. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2440 should be withdrawn from the Committee on House Administration will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Call. Call votes aye. The motion to withdraw House Bill 2440 from Committee on House Administration, not having received the required majority, is declared failed. Further propositions and motions. First reading of House Bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2186 relating to greenhouse gas emissions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2199 relating to financial regulation and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2512 relating to fallen public safety officer registration plate. House Bill 2636 relating to taken wildlife. House Bill 2831 relating to public employment. House Bill 3056 relating to urban renewal and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3128 relating to survey bonds required by Oregon Liquor Control Commission. House Bill 3232 relating to Oregon Health Licensing Agency. House Bill 3298 relating to land reserves. House Bill 3418 relating to reimbursement for health care delivered through an integrated health home model and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3462 relating to building inspection program personnel.
Bills read for the second time were passed to the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2219 relating to landowner preference tags. Extend sunset on landowner preference tags program.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2219A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote? Representative Kennemer votes aye. House Bill 2219A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended on House Bill 2726, which is fairly far down in our third reading list today, that House Bill 2726 be considered immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2726 relating to nutritional information for consumers and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2726A. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House Bill 2726 be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Kotek moves that House Bill 2726 be referred to the Committee on Rules. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is the piece of legislation that will work on providing nutritional information to consumers in chain restaurants. We have some final amendments that we would like to even make this a stronger bill, and we needed to take a little trip through the Rules Committee, and I urge your support of that motion. Thank you.
Further discussion on this motion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close? She does not. To those who have the opinion that House Bill 2726 should be referred to the Committee on Rules, will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. Motion carries. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2726 is referred to the Committee on Rules. Still under third reading of House bills, the clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2068 relating to transfer of tax credits.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2068A. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2068A concerns tax credits. Over the next couple of years, the state of Oregon will issue tens of millions of dollars of tax credits. These tax credits can be sold and transferred. They have a life of as long as 13 years. The Department of Revenue noticed that the Department of Energy and the Department of Revenue needed some additional clarification in how these transfers would be handled. This bill clarifies their current practice and makes it clear that these tax credits can be transferred only to C corporations, S corporations, or personal income taxpayers. The Department of Revenue also was valuing these tax credits just once or twice a year. We are now asking that they do this quarterly to try to refine the valuation of these tax credits. This device is not the preferred solution, but it is the best given the current budget situation facing our state. So I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Benz, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2068A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2290, related to crime.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2290A. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2290 comes to you from your House Judiciary Committee. This is an important bill that makes three much-needed changes to Oregon law. First, House Bill 2290 addresses a concern brought to our attention by the Oregon State Police regarding illegal hunting. Each year, troopers pursue those who illegally hunt wildlife at night. Troopers utilize an aircraft piloted by an officer to locate hunters using illegal spotlights and then radio that information to troopers on the ground who issue a citation. Unless wildlife has been taken, the citation will be for violation of ORS 166.663, which prohibits casting a light from a motor vehicle while armed. Recently, though, a case was dismissed in Klamath County when the judge realized that the violation was observed by the pilot, but the citation was issued by a trooper on the ground. The judge's decision was based on ORS 153.042, which states the citation may only be issued if the conduct takes place in the presence of an officer. This makes it very difficult for officers to bring violators to justice. House Bill 2290 solves this problem by allowing a citation to be issued either when the violation is committed in the presence of the officer or when the officer has probable cause to believe that a violation has occurred based on information received from an officer who observed the violation. Second change made by this bill addresses a concern brought to the committee's attention by the Oregon Department of Justice. Current Oregon statute defines a firearm as a weapon which is designed to expel a projectile by action of powder and which is readily capable of use as a weapon. In a recent Oregon Supreme Court case, the court held that a Raven Arms 25 caliber semi-automatic pistol, also known as a Saturday Night Special, was fully operational but for the fact that it was missing a firing pin, was therefore not a firearm because it was not, quote, readily capable of use as a weapon. This bill clarifies that a firearm is still a firearm, whether or not it is currently operational, as long as it is a weapon that is designed to expel a projectile by the action of powder. By changing the definition of firearm to focus exclusively on what the weapon was designed to do, this bill simplifies and clarifies what constitutes a firearm for purposes of four crimes. Those are felon in possession of a firearm, unlawful possession of a firearm, first-degree theft, and unlawful paramilitary activity. Final change in House Bill 2290 eliminates the sunset pertaining to the admissibility of crime lab reports in criminal trials. Current law provides that a certified copy of a forensic lab report signed by the analyst is prima facie evidence of the test results unless the defendant provides notice of an objection. If this important law is allowed to sunset, a forensic analyst would need to testify in every criminal prosecution in which analysis of a sample is conducted. This would be both unnecessary and very expensive. It's unnecessary because Oregon law already provides that the analyst must appear if the defendant provides a notice of objection. Moreover, it would be expensive because it would require state forensic lab personnel to appear at multiple trials throughout the state, even those at which the defendant does not raise any objection to admission of the lab report. Eliminating the sunset will simply continue current practice and will save the state money. This is a good bill that will make three important changes to Oregon law. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This is a good bill. I would only make one caveat that my friend from Lake Oswego said. They're not hunters if they're out there spotlighting. They're poachers, and they should be spotlighted themselves.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrett, do you wish to close?
Only to say that I stand happily corrected by my friend. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2290A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2370 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Friday, May 8th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2403, relating to forfeiture.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2403A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2403 gives law enforcement the ability to handle lawfully seized vehicles that have a hidden compartments. The intent of this bill is to prevent those vehicles from being used again with the compartment intact and to prevent innocent owners from taking ownership of such a vehicle. This bill makes changes to both the civil and criminal forfeiture statutes. In a quick glance at what it does, it defines a hidden compartment. It requires law enforcement to disable a hidden compartment. Also requires law enforcement to disable a hidden compartment of a vehicle prior to release to the owner. And should the cost of the disablement exceed the value of the vehicle will be salvaged or scrapped and distribution formula applies. And finally, it allows law enforcement to recoup disablement costs. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2403A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2705, related to vocational assistance for injured workers.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2705A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, under the state's workman's compensation system, the insurer or self-insured employer must provide vocational assistance to an injured worker who is eligible for assistance to return to work. Notice must be provided to the worker within 5 days of having knowledge of the worker's likely eligibility for vocational assistance or at the time of the worker is medically stationary. If the worker has not returned to the worker's regular employment or suitable employment, and the worker is not receiving vocational assistance. House Bill 2705 clarifies the second condition of notice of vocational assistance eligibility to include the worker not being released for regular employment and is not returned to other suitable employment. There is no opposition to this measure, and the bill passed unanimously out of House and Business and Labor and is supported by Management Labor Advisory Committee. I urge an aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Barnhart votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2705A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2745, relating to development review processing.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2745A. Again, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, this bill, 2745A, comes out of Business and Labor. It was unanimous. What this bill does, it allows your counties, and this is permissive, to set up with their development community a fast track on a permit process. As the statute reads now, we cannot do that except for zoning. So therefore, if people would like to pay extra in order to expedite a permit process, they will have the ability to do so. The big question came up, what does that affect the regular system? None whatsoever. This is on top of the regular system that has the regular time frames, but what this would do would allow a expedited fast track for projects that need quick attention and need a permit process in order to get people to work. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote? Kennemer votes aye. House Bill 2745A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2784, relating to Oregon financial institutions that receive funds from the Troubled Asset Relief Program and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2784A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2784A is a bipartisan reporting and transparency bill. Its purpose is to provide oversight and transparency regarding TARP funds spent by state chartered banks. TARP is the Troubled Asset Relief Program funded under the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008. This bill is an opportunity for state-chartered banks that receive TARP funds to tell their important story to Oregonians about how they are different from the big national banks. It will allow us to ask questions in a public forum legitimized by the passage of this bill. It's a simple bill. It's all about transparency of how our taxpayer dollars are being spent. It's a way for Oregon state-chartered banks to join with us to educate the public about how those dollars are being spent. Now, first, a little history about the bill. I filed this bill early in the session when TARP II was still being developed, and it was unclear how many local banks would pursue and receive TARP dollars. The Oregon Bankers Association, which includes big federally chartered banks like Bank of America, as well as the 35 state-chartered banks, indicated their early opposition to the bill. So I've met with their representatives and representatives of two of the banks that are currently receiving TARP dollars under what they call the Capital Purchase Program. They provided significant parts of the information I requested, and I appreciate that. and I considered whether or not to move forward with the bill. I talked to people who know the industry and decided that, yes, a bill is needed, and I'd like to tell you why. Colleagues, the main reason this bill is needed is that the federal government is not doing a good job at oversight. In committee, we heard from Bill Black, who was former legal counsel to the Federal Bank Board during the savings and loan crisis. Mr. Black says a bill is needed because he says the federal government is not providing proper oversight, and in his experience, state legislatures can improve the banking environment for business and consumers by asking questions and fulfilling our oversight responsibilities in conjunction with our state regulatory body, the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The evidence that the federal government is not doing the job is considerable. McClatchy newspapers state, quote, "The massive programs designed to rescue the nation's financial sector are operating without adequate oversight, with vague goals and limited disclosure of their details to the taxpayers who are paying for them." The General Accounting Office report has talked of inconsistent oversight. And in the wake of that report, House Minority Leader John Boehner said, quote, "No one has any idea where the money is going, how much is left, or where it went," close quote. That's John Boehner. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, it's the state's charge to regulate state chartered banks. And what I'm trying to say to you is that we've got to do the hard work with DCBS because the federal government is not going to do it for us. The topic is timely. Here in Oregon, we saw two banks fail this year. One bank was in the good representative from Oregon's Christmas Tree District, Silver Falls Bank, and Pinnacle Bank in Beaverton, where the representative from Beaverton has his businesses banked. And two other banks have received cease and desist letters. And the frustration here in Oregon is mounting. 2 weeks ago, Portland developer Tom Moyer and Hoffman Construction announced that they are ceasing construction on a development that employed 350 construction workers. 350 workers, colleagues. According to Ryan Frank of the Oregonian, Tom Moyer's financial woes show that even though the U.S. Treasury pumps billions of dollars into banks, that cash is not landing in the hands of the people who need it. And lenders' reluctance means construction workers may not receive a paycheck. The vice president of Hoffman Construction, their vice president, said, quote, "I get a little bit mad about it. The banks are getting the money, but they're not lending it out," close quote. The Oregonian's Doug Bates, their editorial writer, concluded in an editorial about the project, quote, "We learned this week that the $700 billion in bank bailout money approved by Congress last fall has dwindled to about $135 billion. And colleagues, he says this, quote, "It seems fair to ask where the money has gone." And Doug Bates at the Oregonian is right. It does seem fair to ask where the money has gone. Now, we absolutely don't want to be in a position where we are pressuring banks to make risky loans. And Moyer's project may well be risky. I don't know. But the point here is that the public has questions about their taxpayer dollars, and they look to their elected representatives to answer them. This bill is all about asking and answering questions in a legitimized public forum. So what does the amended bill do? I met with the Oregon Bankers Association, heard their concerns about the potential stigma around TARP funding. The compromise I suggested in this bill strips out the original task force structure and strips out the language on regulation. It seemed like overkill since only three banks were likely to receive TARP funding. And incidentally, a fourth bank just announced that it is receiving TARP funding, a fourth bank, which runs counter to the argument that this bill is so onerous that it will force banks to give the money back. That bank just accepted TARP dollars, presumably knowing this bill was in the works. in replacement of the language on creating a task force and making recommendations on regulation, I instead turn the bill into a basic reporting and transparency bill. The bill says the House and Senate Consumer Protection Committees shall conduct hearings on the progress achieved by state-chartered TARP-funded banks, and that those banks come before the committees to tell their important story to Oregonians. This is a very reasonable compromise, colleagues, and there is precedent for this approach of using statute to require interim committees to review an issue. House Bill 2981, which we just passed, uses this same very concept. As I close, I submit to you that this bill is very pro-business. In committee, we heard testimony from Michelle Rand of Estacada, who owns an asset management firm named Cascade Investment Advisors. She's worked for over 30 years in the bank and trust field, including 15 years for First Interstate Bank. She sees House Bill 2784A as a shareholders' rights issue. She thinks this bill will provide greater transparency, and she believes that asking questions is a good thing for the legislature. And think about the entrepreneurs in your districts who are having a hard time getting a line of credit. They have questions about how their taxpayer dollars are being spent in this program. So does Hoffman Construction and its 350 workers who are unemployed. So, colleagues, this is about transparency with taxpayer dollars, and it's up to you to decide. At the end of the day, I believe this bill is about answering three key questions. One, do you think the federal government has done a good job in providing oversight of your TARP dollars? Two, do you think the legislature has the right to ask questions about how your TARP dollars are spent by state-chartered banks? Three, do you think it would benefit the public and business to systematically ask those questions in the light of day, with the public being able to be educated along the way? Colleagues, our banks have an important story to tell. If you believe we have the right, the duty, to ask questions to help share that story, I ask you to vote yes on House Bill 2784A. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Colleague, there actually is not any applause in favor, any actually expressions in favor or opposition to a bill from within the House chambers. We ask you to observe that. Further discussion, Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does that mean I will not get any applause to the bill?
You will get no applause.
I wasn't expecting any anyway, but I got my hopes up there for a moment, sir. Thank you. Since my name was mentioned in the description read by the representative from, I believe, the Soul of Portland, I think it's appropriate for me to get up and just tell briefly the story of my business. I run a software business, and we had decided several years ago, after banking with large national banks, to keep our money in the community. And so we moved all of our accounts over to Pinnacle Bank, a bank out in Beaverton, and felt pretty good about that. They got caught up in some loans that went bad on them and wound up failing, being taken over. And as we watched that unfold, we decided that we had to move our money, and did so, put it into a couple of the big national banks again. And I would rather do business with local banks, in part because the relationship that I had with the local banks was so much more personal than what I get with the larger banks. I had, subsequent to moving the money over, applied for credit lines. I always do this when I don't need any credit. So I applied for credit lines, having a large sum of money in this same bank, and was effectively denied anything more than the default 25 or 50K credit line. To me, this is a pro-business bill because while banks are businesses, they also facilitate businesses within the community. And I would love to be able to see where the money is going. And if these state-chartered banks can make it clear to businessmen like myself that they have the money and can loan it out and are willing to do so, I think that there are a lot of good jobs, a lot of good prospects within the community to take those funds and develop businesses, hire more folks on, et cetera, at a time when we certainly need to find and build some more jobs in this state and our communities. Lastly, I've heard some rumors that some of the banks find there to be too much regulation or may think that there's too much regulation around this and that they would just as soon turn the money back to the feds. And I think each and every one of us in here understands the sentiment of, hey, enough regulation already. But I would certainly hope that the banks would think twice and even thrice about doing that before doing that, because it would I'm concerned that it might not serve the community as well. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I will be a no vote on this. Again, we carve out our in-state people when actually I don't feel we have a problem with our in-state people. Just like we did in the mortgage situation, we carved out and went after the people in the state of Oregon. What did we do with the federal people? Nothing, because we have no control. So therefore, we're going to make an example of people locally, not the ones that may be the problem. You want accountability? Ask your congressman and your senator, where's your accountability? You know, it's amazing to me that we get something like this in front of us because of the lack of federal action. Yet I hear no one on this floor cry out about illegal presence here because of lack of federal action, of drugs in our community because of lack of federal action. So folks, who are we trying to regulate? The problem with banks right now, is my understanding from the banking community, is the regulators themselves. The Obama administration wants us to have more credit, which is great. But the regulators are coming in and saying you have to have more assets in your bank. You have to have more liquid assets. Therefore, they're upping the ante, which in turn cuts off the credit. So, folks, the problem here may be regulation. But don't try to take it out on our local banks.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of this bill for a couple of different reasons. One of them, I just happened to be reading that liberal rag, the Reader's Digest, this weekend. And one of the articles suggested transparency in government. They urge that people be able to see where their tax dollars go. And one of the issues that they were especially concerned about was where does the TARP money go? The other reason is when I go to town halls or when I see my constituents at the grocery store on Main Street, one of the issues they talk about is their tax dollars and how it is spent. And I understand that. And that's one of the reasons why I've been supportive of transparency in our state government and also in the funds that I get as a legislator. So I try to be totally transparent. I urge transparency in government, and I certainly urge transparency on where the TARP monies go. This does not mean more regulation. It does not mean that we're criticizing any banks. All we're saying is that where the TARP money goes, where taxpayer money goes, that should be transparent for all constituents. Thank you.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Colleagues, I rise today to explain my opposition to this bill. And I do so because I voted yes in committee. I gave it a courtesy vote because I felt that the question needed to come before the larger body for further discussion. I remain in opposition after giving this significant thought, and I do so in support of our local Oregon bankers, a few of whom have accepted these funds, but for a very different reason than we see in the big banks at the national level. Specifically, it's because they were asked to do so to enhance their capital base. Our local banks are solid institutions. They're anxious to loan to qualified candidates, and they're especially anxious to tell their story to this body. These folks will be happy to come before any interim committee who asks them to do so. In my opinion, we simply don't need this bill.
Representative Schaffler.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, transparency...
To the bill.
Thank you, sir. Transparency is good. That's why we have cameras running today and in committee and throughout our hearings and a lot of venues around the state. I think it is our right and our duty to my friend from the soul of Portland to ask these hard questions. I would never disagree with that. It's totally right, and I think we try our best to do that. First of all, there's absolutely no need for this bill at all. It's not a regulatory bill, and it's not an accountability bill. We don't need the bill because these said banks will gladly show up to any committee when invited and explain and answer any questions we have for them, not just relating to TARP, the mortgage crisis, lending, and business, and home, anything you can relating to finance you wish to ask them. It isn't a regulatory bill because it adds no regulation, and it isn't accountability because their accountability means you're held accountability through some kind of reward or consequence. There's no reward for showing up, and there's no consequence other than for breaking the law, I suppose, for not showing up. But if they show up and give the answers that people don't like, there's no hammer there. There's none at all. Let's see. This is clearly, as been stated in the press, is just going to add stigma to our locally state-regulated banks, and they've even suggested they may send the money back. We certainly can't afford that. We need this money infused in this economy now more than ever. If it does go back, where is it going to go then? And how many jobs are we going to miss out on, prevailing wage union jobs, will we not have if this money does go back? Let me see here. As far as the federal government goes, I'm sorry to hear that people have such a low opinion of our federal government, our new president, and our junior senator for doing such a lousy job with this. I don't think they're doing a bad job. The lending has tightened up. And why is it tightened up? Because we are in a global economic crisis due to risky loans being let out, and they've tightened up the credit. They've asked for more collateral. They want more responsibility for the people borrowing the money. That's why it's tightened up. And because we let out all these risky loans over the years, people are losing their homes, losing their businesses, losing their jobs, losing their ability to feed their families. I don't think I ever want to go back to that. And I don't think anyone on this floor wants to go back to that. Let's see here. Bear with me. And by the way, John Boehner is not in control in Washington. Let's see. Yes, I couldn't agree with him. I hope he's not. And we are not Barney Frank. Let me see. Bear with me. And once again, I personally guarantee to you right here and now that if this bill does not become the law, I, as chair of the Business and Labor Committee, which I believe... as the bill states, hope you got a good shot of my better side there, other appropriate interim legislative committees, I think the Business and Labor Committee falls underneath that title, I will invite these banks, these said banks, to come and answer the questions, and I will invite my friends to come and ask them, and they will show up, and they will answer them. One of my constituents who is the president and CEO of one of our smaller banks here in the state told me before this money came to state-regulated banks, when it was still just going to the larger federal-regulated banks, he made it very clear the best that he was disappointed that this money was going to the federal regulated banks, who I think there may be, they may be using that money just to shore up their assets. I don't know. We can't make them come to answer that question. That is the job of our federal government, and I hope and I believe they are doing it. He said the thing that the federal government needed to do was to send this money to locally, local banks, locally owned banks. because they're the banks that have the relationships with us, Oregonians, people who live here, people who work here, people who buy homes and run businesses. That's where he said the money needed to go. He said that would have a direct positive impact on our local economy. The federal government turned right around, and they got the message.
Representative Barker yields.
Thank you, Representative. I think that's only like the third time I've ever went over. The federal government got the message, colleagues, and they sent it to our local banks that we know, that we live with. He lives right down the street from me. And then they're going out, and they are letting out money. I've heard from one of these banks, they are letting out the money. Yeah, it is tighter, but they're letting it out. They're putting it, infusing it in this economy right when we need it the most. And now we want to poke them in the eye and threaten that money going back to the federal government. We do not need this bill. I highly, strongly urge your no vote, and I'll sit down with one question. We want to know, we're so in such a hurry to find out where all this money's going, because it's the taxpayers' money, and it is our money, and I want to know where it's going. I challenge anyone on this floor to explain to the average taxpayer in Oregon where their state tax dollars are going in the state budget. Because you know what? None of us can answer all those questions. And it's impossible because we can't be everything. We can't know everything. But it's a bad bill. I strongly urge your no vote.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm confused because when we started this session this morning, we tried to bring forth a bill that was about transparency, and it was voted down. Now we've got a bill again about transparency, and the same people who voted no are voting yes on this one. So I'll look forward to some clarification somewhere along the line from someone.
Representative Jefferson Smith. To the bill.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker. The last time I rose in this chamber for any significant purpose was to help propose and support a bill that would hold government to a higher standard in terms of its disclosure and how it spends money and delivers outcomes. I rise in part in that spirit. I rise also because we are in global economic crisis, in significant part because we were asleep, because regulators were asleep, because watchdogs were asleep, because the systems of accountability and our system of governance were asleep. And it melted down the global economy. And right now, the degree of faith in institutions such as ours are lower than they have been since the Nixon era, in significant part because we were asleep. We have a slight chance, a small chance to do a little thing, not to be asleep today. I urge your aye vote.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. Two questions. First question I have for you is, do both the Department of Finance, Corporate Securities, and the Department of Consumer Business and Services already examine and regulate state banks, including how they deploy the capital purchase program funds?
I'm not sure I caught the second part of that question. Could you repeat it for me?
Clarification?
Clarification, please, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, the bottom line is, do DCBS and DFCS already examine and regulate state banks, including on how they deploy the CPP funds?
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure that the banks get in, or that DCBS gets into that level of detail about where the TARP dollars are spent. They regulate on basic capital ratios, and I think that's in part why this bill is needed, so that the public can have that type of conversation in a legitimized public forum, and we can allow the banks to roll out their important story.
Okay. Additional question then, Mr. Speaker?
Additional questions. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Okay. Thank you. What are the qualifications of the members that will be assigned to these two, the Senate and as well as the House committees that will be responsible for overseeing the TARP?
Their primary qualifications will be that they were elected by 50% plus one by their constituents, just like in any type of bill passing authority, any type of oversight authority that we might have on any of the really complex topics that we have. And in addition to that, the Department of Consumer Business Services will be our co-pilot on this bill.
Representative Olson.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm going to be in opposition to this bill at this time right now. I honestly don't think it's necessary. And from my understanding, DCVS and DFCS already examine and regulate state banks at this time. Thank you.
Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just want to address some of the questions from my own perspective. Hopefully I'm in line with the representative from the soul of Portland. To the representative from Medford, I'd say the simple answer to your question in terms of the purview is these are Oregon taxpayer dollars that are included in this mix in the TARP program, so that's why we have the right and the responsibility for this bill. To my colleague from the Central Coast and also Happy Valley, it seems that the premise that some people are working on is that oversight and accountability and hearings constitute critique or disciplinary action. I guess I don't see it that way. We ask agencies and institutions to report back to us all the time. It's about oversight. It's about stewardship of tax dollars and the programs. So it's not necessarily a disciplinary action to ask any group or agency to come back and report to us. Also, the representative from Happy Valley talked about these people will gladly show up to his committee, and I take him for his word on that, but I think the idea of this bill is to give further notice and a degree of certainty so that they know that there is this expectation and timeliness, because these people are very busy. So I think that's something that's also significant. And to my good friend from Southern Klamath County, who I hope recognizes there's nothing about tobacco in this bill. The other bill is a different bill that does different things. So although he sees a contradiction, I don't think one exists. In sum, colleagues, oversight does not constitute critique or disciplinary action. It's about maximizing transparency and accountability, and I think that is our responsibility. So I urge your support.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to declare a potential conflict.
Please state your conflict.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I serve on a regional board of an Oregon bank.
So noted for the record. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request unanimous consent to use a visual aid.
Representative Maurer requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purpose of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, what I'm holding in my hand is the latest report released by the federal government less than 2 weeks ago on how TARP money was used. In fact, state banks are regulated by the state in how they deploy CPP funds. This bill does nothing to add to the conversation. It is a federal government's responsibility, and we need to hold them accountable for how they're holding the banks accountable for the use of those funds. So I urge a no vote.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Shields, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker, just briefly. Thank you. You know, the conversation, unfortunately, about regulation in this state often becomes one about don't look at us, look over there. It's not the state banks, it's the federal banks. It's not the bank here, the biggest state chartered banks in Oregon. It's Bank of America, it's Citibank. And the Oregon Bankers Association, as I mentioned, includes big federally chartered banks and the state chartered banks. And we've seen time and time again in this process when an entity will try to play one regulator off the other. And for the life of me, I cannot understand their opposition to this bill. And I can't tell if it's coming from the state chartered banks or the big nationally chartered banks who might not want these questions asked. This bill essentially legitimizes what the banks said they're already willing to do. There is no hammer on this bill, and I think that's a good thing. It's into the notion about the threat that nobody has actually followed through on about sending the money back. I think the fact that a fourth bank just decided to take TARP dollars runs counter to that threat. They knew that this bill was in the works. I presume that they decided that it was more appropriate to take the TARP funds than to deal with this bill. So I think the approach that the representative from Beaverton suggested, that this is a pro-business bill, is true. And I think this bill is about accountability. I think coming to tell your story in a public forum where questions can be asked is accountability. But it's also about taxpayer frustration. 350 workers at Hoffman out of work. The bill's about fairness to taxpayers and business. And at the end of the day, colleagues, this bill is all about transparency. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Greg Smith votes no. House Bill 2780, Representative Tomei, you're in the purpose for courtesies, correct? Okay. House Bill 2784A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Tomei.
I request permission to return to courtesies, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Tomei requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to call to your attention that we have a group of seniors here today. I mentioned them earlier in the floor session. They're behind us here. They're wearing yellow scarves. They'll be coming around to see you. Please wave and welcome them into the Capitol.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Great to have you here. Enjoy your day. Further courtesies, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have some constituents from the timber industry up in the aisle, the gallery. And I also have a member of my dairy community running around the building somewhere today, too. So please welcome my constituents.
Welcome to all of you. Welcome to your House of Representatives. Any further courtesies while we're here? Back to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2802, relating to non-economic damages and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2802A. Representative Olson, followed by Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2802, which is dubbed Wrongful Death Bill, comes to you from Judiciary Committee. This bill was heard in committee on April 7th this year. The intent of the original bill was designed to remove the cap of $500,000 as it applies to non-economic damages on any civil action except for torts against public bodies under the Oregon Tort Claims Act. Now, having listened to the testimony to support the bill in the original version, two key questions surfaced that we heard. One was, absent a cap, would tort cases occur? And then the second question was it possible to keep a cap and have an impact necessary to make the bill effective. With those thoughts, the representative from East Clackamas and myself began working together to develop a good policy. And the A engrossed version that you see in front of you today keeps the cap, but raises it to $1.5 million and ties the consumer price index to it. When the smoke settled from this, I believe this is a good common sense approach and is a good bill.
Further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry. Co-carrier, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would also like to thank my colleague who previously spoke for yet again working with me on a difficult and complex issue. It truly is a pleasure to serve with you, sir. This bill, let me explain. This bill is actually fairly limited. It applies only to wrongful death actions, and again, it applies only to the non-economic damages. And let me explain briefly what those are. Wrongful death is it's essentially any time somebody kills somebody because of negligence. The most common fact pattern that produces these actions is automotive in nature. Usually drunk driving is perhaps the paradigmatic example of a wrongful death action. And this applies only to non-economic damages, which in 1987, this legislature capped at $500,000. It has not been raised since 1987. Non-economic damages are typically what we value, for example, a relationship. Many of us in here have loved ones, your significant other. The purpose of the tort system, in part, one of them is to compensate, essentially, victims for the negligence of others, to try and make them whole. Let's pretend you lost your loved one. And let's pretend, furthermore, that your loved one, for whatever reason, did not work, and so there was not necessarily great economic damages. But what is that relationship worth to you? What is it worth? How do we compensate that? That is non-economic damages. And in 1987, it was capped. That cap has not been touched. Now, the original bill tried to remove this cap. For various reasons, I concluded that that simply was not politically viable at this time. And consequently, my colleague and I negotiated this along with various stakeholders, particularly from the Oregon Liability Reform Coalition. And we've reached this agreement. This agreement is fair, it is balanced, it writes something that has long been, I think, manifestly unjust in Oregon revised statute. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? Representative Olson does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill... Representative Barton, for what purpose do you rise?
I wish to declare a conflict.
State your conflict.
I am a litigator at a law firm that litigates wrongful death actions. Also, I have an immediate family member who is a partner at a law firm that litigates wrongful death actions on a contingency fee, on a contingency fee basis.
So noted for the record. Representative Bentz.
Mr. Speaker, hearing the conflict declared, I have the same, somewhat similar conflict, even though I don't try wrongful death cases. My firm does get involved in them on occasion.
So noted for the record. Thank you. Now, those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kettimer, how do you vote? Kettimer votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith. Representative Jefferson Smith. Off the floor. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes no. House Bill 2802A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2907, relating to interstate agreements concerning prevailing rates of wage and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2907. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring a rather short and simple bill forward. It just arose out of a situation on a bidding proposal where one of our contracting agencies entered into an agreement to pay less than what the Oregon prevailing wage law required. I question whether they could do that, and in fact there was a broad enough authority that they could make an agreement with another state, and this happens particularly on bridge projects. For ease of contracting, they'll sometimes adopt one wage. My concern was that while a portion of the bridge is in the state of Oregon, we shouldn't be making agreements that pay less than what Oregon has established as the prevailing wage. This bill closes that from happening, closes that chance of that from happening, and it would very rarely happen, but with bridge projects in our foreseeable future, I wanted to make sure that we were protecting Oregon workers. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser is excused. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Cowan, for what purpose? I'm sorry, Clem votes aye. What purpose are you in? This would be not for this vote. House Bill 2907, having received the constitutional majority. Representative Van Orman, for what purpose are you
Speaker,
in the queue?
Apparently I pushed the wrong button. I should vote aye.
Representative Van Orman changes her vote from aye to nay. Representative Richardson changes his vote from aye to nay. From nay to aye. My mistake.
Yes.
House Bill 2907, now having received unanimous support and reaching the constitutional responsibility, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. I'm sorry. Courtesies. Representative Cowan.
Permission to return to courtesies, Mr.
Representative
Speaker?
Cowan requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've just been advised that the fourth graders from Taft Elementary School in Lincoln City have arrived.
Okay.
If you could wave at us, they're up there in the, oh my goodness, they're filling the gallery up there. They're accompanied by Robert, their leader, and welcome to your Capitol.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Great to have you all here. You've got the seniors in the middle surrounded on both sides. Very good. Are there any further courtesies while we're here? Back to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2940, relating to renewable portfolio standards.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2940A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2940A comes to you from your House Committee on, what is that committee called? Sustainability and Economic Development, which I think is the perfect committee for this bill to come out of. This bill does two things. It allows hydrogen energy, and it allows energy produced at biomass facilities in the state of Oregon that were constructed before 1995 to be counted as renewable energy under Oregon's renewable portfolio standards. This bill, colleagues, is an attempt to fix what I see as an inequity that resulted last session when the 1995 date, which may have made a lot of sense for hydro projects, that provide the bulk of our energy was imposed on biomass projects as well. Biomass projects were caught up in the 1995 DATE debate and were treated the same as hydro. These biomass projects are owned by companies who are operating in a competitive landscape. To treat post-1995 facilities favorably puts the pre-1995 facilities at an economic disadvantage for a reason that, frankly, is arbitrary, particularly as it relates to biomass energy projects. And I want to clarify for the record that the pending project, biomass energy project in my district, because it is a post-95 facility, would not be affected one way or the other by this bill. Let's look at it this way. If the pre-1995 facilities who are competitively disadvantaged operate at a lower capacity or close because their competitiveness is compromised, then we have created a situation where we will be taking biomass, loading it on a truck, and shipping it hundreds of miles, maybe over mountain passes and such, to take it to a more competitive facility. Colleagues, that doesn't make economic sense, and it doesn't make environmental sense. But it is a reality these facilities may face if the playing field is not leveled. Now, the distribution of many of these facilities is weighted heavily toward rural Oregon, where the biomass resource is. It makes absolutely no environmental sense to put that biomass on a truck and haul it longer distances to newer facilities, like, frankly, the facility that is pending in my district. Now, many of you know that I grew up in a mill family and prior to running for the legislature was the general manager of a small family forest products company where we made a living getting the most out of the resource. We purchased the treetops and pre-commercial thinning material not usable by sawmills. We debarked it, cut it into precision lengths so that it could then be used by a stud mill. We resold those precision length blocks to stud mills, chipped the balance, and then sold the bark for biomass energy production. In short, we made a living by getting more value and utility out of the existing resource, which is a sound environmental ethic. I know and understand how those markets work, and it is very low margin work, buying a commodity, adding value, and then selling a commodity that will then be used to produce yet another commodity. The margins are super thin, and like in agriculture, price and cost matter. Trucking is one of the most significant costs we face. And I submit to you that it is not only good economic policy, but good environmental policy to have a wider distribution of these facilities nearer to the sources of biomass that can feed them. And it pains me. It absolutely pains me to no end to watch the hand-wringing over how we can make our transportation solutions in this state more sustainable, but then to look the other way or even outright oppose policies that would decrease transportation needs in an industry trying to make the best use of its sustainable resource. At our company, we made the decision to sell our facility and our equipment because the economic viability of taking a marginal resource and increasing the utilization of that resource and selling it into a commodity market did not have a promising or at least a certain future. And it is unfortunate, but the economics just simply weren't there. And because of difficult market conditions for biomass, we had to truck our material all the way down to White City, just north of Medford. Several truckloads per day went down loaded with biomass and came back empty. Hundreds of dollars in cost daily with unnecessary environmental impact of running trucks hundreds of miles over a mountain pass to move material of marginal value. Colleagues, not only are our forest resources a part of our heritage, they are sustainable. And cooler heads have prevailed in treating it as such in many of our policies. But this is a glaring inequity that advantages one company over another, and it needs to be fixed if we're to do the right thing by the environment, by the economy, and our rural communities in Oregon. Colleagues, I urge your support for this bill, and I do believe that the good representative from Oregon's Christmas Tree District will be speaking momentarily about the merits of the hydrogen piece of this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Thank you. Colleagues, this bill hasn't always been the exciting bipartisan gem that we bring to you today. And despite the personal and petty and punitive efforts of the chairman of the Sustainability Committee. No, wait, I'm supposed to take that part out. Just a second. With the help of the chair of the Sustainability Committee, who often doesn't listen closely, and with the help of the representative from the economic hub of Lane County, finally got that right. This bill comes to you today with two pieces. One has already been explained, and I just want to briefly say something about this one. There was a bill early on the session that we introduced. By we, I mean myself, and fortunately for me, the representative from the Inner East Side, Portland, and the representative from the Bedrock District. It's clerical error, and sometimes the relating clause works against you, and sometimes it works for you, and it worked for us in this case, and we're able to double up. The hydrogen piece of this encourages the PUC to include hydrogen hubs, which are not too far in the future, I might add, and allow full recovery of the costs. Now, those of you who were with me last session signed on to a letter that basically said, through a resolution, that we make hydrogen a top priority in any part of our renewable future. Now, it was just a resolution, but now we find ourselves in this next session of coming a little closer to this becoming a reality. This puts in place a small sort of framework for when hydrogen is available. Please, again, don't think of this part of hydrogen. Don't think cells and hydrogen cars, which are important technologies, but think of hydrogen as a fuel. So we're going to, once again, make a place in our renewable future for hydrogen. And if I could sum up why, it's because we just, I guess it would be a slogan, just store it. We need renewables that allow us to store renewables. I'll give you one quick example. This spring, with the Columbia River in full force, last spring, not this in 08, with the Columbia River in full force, with the winds blowing because of the thermals through the gorge, we had to spill water over the dams. When you do that, you put more nitrogen into the water and you kill fish. We need hydrogen hubs at the center of load when energy is its cheapest to store it in green ammonia and burn it when energy is its most expensive, and California is screaming for it. It will even out our use. It will require no more infrastructure, and this is the important point to me. It will strengthen what we have. The Northwest Hydrogen Alliance, to put this together, has a philosophy that we should hark back to the days of the Northwest Power Act, an act that says we should have regional preference. Let's leverage what we have, namely our hydroelectric. And the way to do that is to store the energy when it's cheap and burn it when it's not. I hope that my colleagues who helped bring this bill forward will say a word about this. But colleagues, I appreciate not only the representative from the economic hub of Lane County, but also the colleagues that will speak, and I would appreciate your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last winter, we had quite a bit of storm damage, trees down in the North Coast area. And people said it looked like a bomb went off. It looked like what happened when the volcano blew. Well, we didn't know what we were going to do with all that, and that became kind of the beginning of our little biomass efforts down on the North Coast. And it actually birthed several companies. People are going around and cleaning up the woods now from some of these storm-damaged areas and creating a product. One company in my district is selling this as hog fuel and powering the mill in Wana, but they have more than they can sell and for that one use. And so they are looking for other ways to use this, other mills to power or schools or whatever, and they have the capacity to build the equipment, which has caused there to be new manufacturing jobs. And anything we can do to create work in our rural areas, especially with our timber industry, and using this form of industry, this should count for our renewables, because as long as we're growing trees, we have a renewable product to use. And this is a really good use of it. It's a recycling. It's a great way to recycle in the woods, and it cleans it up for replanting. And some of these companies do it all. You call them up, they come and they clean it up, they take it, and they clear it out, and they replant for you, arrange for it. So this, I see, is another green vote for our rep from Happy Valley, and I hope the rest of you will also take it. Thank you.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, this is a good bill and absolutely deserves your eye support, and I applaud the good representative from the Economic Hub of Lane County for bringing this forward. However, it does raise a question that as we pass this bill, I think we need to keep in our minds when we're thinking about this. As a little bit of background, I would agree, I think, with the sentiment of your comments that sort of arbitrarily excluding renewable facilities and renewable suppliers that were not online, that were online prior to 1995, is inequitable, and this bill takes care of that. The problem is that when we set the RPS standard at 25%, it was set on a real basis, and so you take this bill and a couple other bills that are circulating right now, and you start piecemealing out these portions. It's the right thing to do. However, it makes that 25% RPS by 2025. More prosaic, actually. I mean, we know, I think a lot of us think that 25 by 25 was ear candy more than reality, and what I would argue is as we're doing these sorts of bills, this one, which is a good bill, and others that will follow, we maybe look at our 25 by 25 standard and actually go back and redo it and make it real. I don't know what the exact number is. I think the exact number of current renewables is somewhere in the order of 50%. You include our hydro, which is 42, 44. You include our renewables that we already have. I'm not sure what the number is, but I think it's 50. If whatever the number is, let's say that's the number. That's the starting point. And then let's make the goal, whatever the goal is. Is it 65%? Is it 75%? That's all appropriate. But let's be honest about it. Let's not have this sort of arbitrary number and then even change that arbitrary number and make it less real by sort of piecemeal changes. Once again, this change is a good change. It needs to happen. But let's remember as we're doing this, we're sort of changing that goal. Let's get back and talk real numbers with that goal. Thank you, colleagues.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. House Bill 2940A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2952, relating to small-scale local energy projects.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2952A. Representative Holvey. Why don't you try out Representative Nolan's mic? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I must have wore out my microphone yesterday.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 2952A comes to you from that committee, the House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development that was referred to earlier. This bill provides a streamlined approach to meet offset requirements, which are required to provide a net air quality benefit for small-scale renewable energy projects. This is a great bill. It's supported by both the DEQ and the AOI. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Chris Edwards votes aye. House Bill 2952A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2953, relating to bidding requirements for public improvement contracts.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2953A. Representative Kettemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2953 is a relatively modest bill that attempts to close a couple of loopholes in public contracting. Specifically, it tries to improve these by indicating a couple of specific things beyond the history of performance and integrity and quality are qualified legally. It adds specific ones beyond even that of a responsible bidder. And that is specifically that they must have the licenses and insurance legally required to perform the contract. It seems that we have instances where some of these bidders are kind of doing this on the side. And what they do is they don't necessarily have, or their subs don't have the licenses. A lot of times they employ people who are hired as independent contractors instead of as employees, and that's how they skate around the requirements for particularly workers' comp insurance. I think this corrects those loopholes and is an important step in the right direction. The representative from Lane in Linn County asked me a question about this, and that was, what about bad contractors, and does this deal with this? And I think the answer, and we'll see if I get to his question enough, is that actually there are already requirements regarding the lowest qualified bidder. The lowest, of course, is the financially lowest, but you must be qualified. And in that regards, the bill speaks to that in Section 2, and then DAS has a form that public entities must fill out about bidders and do a background check, which includes their past performance, and something that I learned today, and I think our administrator, Teresa Van Winkle, for her extra effort, is that actually public agencies are supposed to respond and create a record when contracts are not completed competently and well. So I think there are protections in this bill, and this adds these smaller protections. There are already some protections. This adds a couple new ones. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
The good representative, Carrier, is absolutely correct. I note that the current law already requires that the contractor has a satisfactory record of performance. The contracting agency shall document the bidder's record of performance, and so forth. If contracting agencies actually follow the state law the way it is now and the way this bill will amend it, those who have demonstrated poor performance in other prior contracts won't get the business. That's very important. We all know the stories about contracts that have been let to people who have been sued over prior performance, who have demonstrated very poor records of performance, and that should not happen in Oregon because our law already requires that. This bill adds appropriate additional steps, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Kenemer, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. House Bill 2953A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2955, relating to retainage in connection with public improvement contracts.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2955A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2955A addresses the oversight that occurred in the 2003 legislature revamped and updated the state's public contracting code. One of the changes was an unintentional repealing of the regulation dealing with alternative to cash retainage. Retainage is the difference between the amount earned by the contractor on the public improvement contract and the amount paid by the contracting agency. The withholding of retainage by the contractor or subcontractor in the public improvement contract is made in the amount equal to no more than 5% of the contract price of the work completed, unless the charter of the continuing contracting agency requires higher percentage. Prior to the statutory changes made in 2003, alternative financial instruments were used as retainage, such as irrevocable letters of credit. House Bill 2955A clarifies the alternative financial instruments can continue to be used. There is no known opposition to this measure, and the bill was passed unanimously out of the House Business and Labor Committee. I urge your aye vote.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Freeman, how do you vote? Freeman votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Krieger votes aye. Representative Gilman, how do you vote? Gilman votes aye. House Bill 2955A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And colleagues, we're just planning to do two bills, one for a vote, one for a move back to committee, and then be done by noon-ish. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2999, relating to pesticide use reporting system and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2999A. Briefly, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Another non-controversial environmental bill coming out of House Ag and Natural Resources. Oregon Toxics Alliance and Oregonians for Food and Shelter both encourage you to vote yes on the modifications to the pesticide use reporting system. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. Are you intentionally in the queue, Representative Clem? No. House Bill 2999A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3004, relating to sales of foreclosed property and declaring an emergency.
The question arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3004A. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House Bill 3004 be referred to...
Representative Holvey, maybe could you step forward to Representative Barton's mic? Thank you. Not that we're trying to silence your voice. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House Bill 3004 be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Holvey moves that House Bill 3004 be referred to the Committee on Rules. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill had a little glitch in it that we thought we could move over to the other side to work on, and a glitch that seems to be a little bit larger, and we'd like to have rules take a look at this real quick and get it back to the floor. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the motion to refer? Seeing none, Representative Holby, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that House Bill 3004 should be referred to the Committee on Rules will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. The clerk will not open the voting system because the motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 3004 is referred to the Committee on Rules. The chair requests unanimous consent that the remaining bills on today's third reading of House Bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on the Thursday, May 7th, 2009 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the two bills on today's final reading, memorials and resolutions calendar be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, May 7th, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 8, relating to emergency services. Senate Bill 10, relating to inter-county adoptions of children in custody of the Department of Human Services, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 38, relating to climate change, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 227, relating to furnishing alcoholic beverages to a minor. Senate Bill 287, relating to licensing of residential facilities. Senate Bill 303, relating to humane special agents. Senate Bill 344, relating to county officers. Senate Bill 498, relating to retroactivity of laws applied by the Department of Revenue and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 607, related to outdoor advertising signs. Senate Bill 618, related to military discharge records and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 633, related to investments of public funds and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 646, related to budget levels for Type B area agencies. Senate Bill 679, related to health benefit plan dividends paid for health. For healthy lifestyles. Senate Bill 687 related to lawyer trust accounts appropriated money. Senate Bill 691 related to compensation for loss of value of private forest land resulting from regulation of forest practice. Senate Bill 763 related to transferable development credits and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 786 related to unlawful religious discrimination and employment practices. Senate Bill 794 related to condemnation. Senate Bill 863 related to reimbursement of local filmmaker productions. Senate Bill 911 related to persons found guilty except or insanity. Senate Bill 928 relating to unlawful employment practices involving victims of certain crimes. Senate Bill 952 relating to rights of tenants in foreclosed property and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 973 relating to life insurance.
Bills read for the first time were passed to the Speaker's desk for referral to a committee near you. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 50 relating to deadlines for notice of claim on contractors' payment bonds and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 53 relating to prevailing rates of wage and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 56 relating to complaint of discriminatory practice. Senate Bill 58 relating to discriminatory practices involving real property and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 59 relating to housing discrimination and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 60 relating to fees incurred by Bureau of Labor and Industries for collection of judgment. Senate Bill 109 relating to sales of travel. Senate Bill 110 relating to death benefits paid in workers' compensation claims. Senate Bill 113 related to accreditation of post-secondary schools. Senate Bill 114 related to academic degrees and declared emergency. Senate Bill 242 related to previous convictions. Senate Bill 464 related to recording groups. Senate Bill 558 related to commercial transactions governed by Uniform Commercial Code.
Bills read for the second time were passed to the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Schaffler.
Mr. Speaker. Apparently, some of our colleagues in the lobby, Misters Mike Dewey and Tom Gallagher, will be wearing chicken suits when they testify on the bill to abolish the Fryer Commission in hearing room B today at 1 p.m. They had a friendly bet with their lobbyist colleague, Fawn McNeely, and apparently they underestimated her ability to raise funds for the Oregon Food Bank, and she soundly thrashed them. So let's all go laugh at Mike and Tom at 1 o'clock.
Further announcements, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, please grab your lunch and within 10 minutes meet in room 350. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to suspend the rules in order to allow Representative Widener to change his vote on House Bill 2784. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purposes of allowing Representative Widener to change his vote on House Bill 2784. I think Representative Nolan withdraws her motion.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Further announcements. The chair requests unanimous consent. Actually, this is not unanimous consent. Effective immediately, I'm making the following appointments to the Fujian Sister State Committee. Representative Dennis Richardson, Representative Jules Bailey, Representative Dave Hunt, co-chair. Also, effective immediately, I'm making the following appointment to the Commission on Asian Affairs, Representative Nick Call. Any further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Campaign for Oregon Seniors and People with Disabilities is hosting its Legislative Action Day today, as you've heard. And as mentioned, you'll recognize them running around in their bright yellow scarves. I'd like to take this opportunity to speak on behalf of the campaign about the service system that affords vulnerable Oregon seniors and people with disabilities the independence, choice, and dignity that has made Oregon's long-term care system a national model. The current economic crisis, coupled with a quickly graying population, is putting these services in jeopardy. The combined economic and human impacts from drastic cuts or inaction are simply too great. Oregon's home and community-based system is an economic engine that provides 39,000 jobs, generates $1.7 billion in economic activity in communities across Oregon, and leverages hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funding. And Oregon's 65-plus population is expected to double in less than 20 years, comprising nearly one in five Oregonians and signaling impending strain on a system already fraying at the seams. More than ever, fulfilling the promise of independence, choice, and dignity that the legislature codified in ORS Chapter 410 is the right thing to do. It also remains the fiscally responsible and cost-effective thing to do, especially now. I would encourage my colleagues to consider both the significant economic and human impacts that could result from significant cuts to these services. For every $1 million in federal funding that we send back to Washington, D.C., Oregon loses an average of 30 jobs and $1.7 million in economic activity in communities across the state. These programs disproportionately affect women, who make up the majority of Oregon's caregiving workforce and individuals they serve. These programs are disproportionately will affect rural communities who rely on the significant economic impact these providers have. In short, these services affect us all, whether it's our grandparents, our parents, or ourselves, who are already in need or will someday need these services. The state cannot afford to leave these vulnerable Oregonians without the help necessary to remain in less expensive community-based care. We cannot afford to allow short-term savings to lengthen and deepen the economic crisis we currently face.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. Thursday, May 7, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. on Thursday, May 7, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.